Interesting. One of the things for me that I find is missing from most of these discussions is we've apologized for historical wrongs in other areas. We've apologized for the Komagata Maru. We've apologized for the head tax. We've apologized for residential schools. And yet we're still ignoring the knowledge and approach that the elders in these societies had towards these drugs. So that's really resonant with me in particular when you speak of that.
Okay, one quick statement, one quick question. The quick statement is, I think you mischaracterized what I say. I never say that cannabis and caffeine are the same. I say caffeine's more risky, dangerous in three categories. Cannabis is more risky in one. Caffeine is more risky in overdose deaths, overuse deaths, and withdrawal symptoms. Cannabis has higher impairment levels of novice users, which could justify some restrictions that don't apply to coffee beans. However, I do think we have to be realistic about the amount of obedience that teenagers display, which is zero. Zero obedience. They're going to use it anyway. Do we want them using it with safe point of sale and quality control, or do we want them buying off the black market from Buddy, who also is selling coke and heroin? That's really the only question we have to decide about that. And I think, would you have a problem, Mark Hayden, with a system that had 16 and over, like the Senate report recommended, buy on their own, 15 and under with parental and physician supervision also have access? Would you have any problem with that?
This feels a bit like deja vu. I keep having the same conversation with you, David. Yes.
Well, if you're going to mischaracterize my statement, I'm going to put you on the spot as punishment.
I stand corrected about your position on caffeine. Okay. So I have no problem with cannabis being made available, but the issue, again, is a ranked system. So cannabis should be more available than alcohol, and alcohol should be more available than tobacco. So a ranked system makes complete sense to me. And then I throw psychedelics in the mix, and I think some kind of supervision is required, essentially.
Where does processed food and sugar fit into that ranking system?
And there's chocolate. Let's talk about the damages and health risks of chocolate.
All caffeine, we let kids have caffeine anymore too, without any limits.
Can I chime in?
Yeah.
There's also another point to be sort of elucidated from the discussion, right? Because we talk about access. Teenagers have access to cannabis. When we're talking about access, we're talking about access through a legal avenue of access, right? And so I think that there's a big difference between a system in which no young person can be arrested or saddled with a criminal record arising from their use of cannabis, and a system which also then subjects young people to the influences and vagaries of capitalism as consumers being convinced that they should buy and consume more and more and more of a product that is making money for the people producing and selling it. And John Conroy actually had a fairly pitched argument in front of Bill Blair about this, at the end of which I sort of looked at Mr. Blair and I said, you must have thought I was the radical one first, but I'm not as crazy as Conroy. Because he favored a system where 16-year-olds could go into a store and purchase cannabis. And I said, no, I don't happen to favor that system. I happen to favor a system in which no young person or any other Canadian can face criminal consequences for accessing cannabis. But I think the decision and whether a 16 or 17 or person under the age of majority should be able to have access to it, legal access to it, is a decision that has to flow through a parent or other supervisory authority, not through a profit-motivated shopkeeper. Because at the end of the day, when cannabis is legal and becomes a commodity like everything else, it's going to be marketed, sold, and it's going to be, something that puts money in people's pockets, and therefore there's a real incentive to get you to buy as much of it as possible. Anheuser-Busch spends $1 billion every year to try to sell alcohol just in North America.
The same is true for caffeine. Would you favor age limits on coffee purchases?
Well, I think I'd favor parental restrictions on accessing highly potent caffeinated substances. But, caffeine, I appreciate your nuanced distinction between the risks of caffeine and cannabis, and thank you for explaining that because it helped clarify my thinking on your position as well. But the impairment piece is pretty strong, and by definition, most youths are novice users. So I think there's a pretty fundamental difference there that it's hard to get it over when you're talking about age limits. So
I, I do think there's also a point that we're kind of glossing over that was that's actually is the point. How many people in this room had alcohol before they were of the legal age of majority?
Everybody.
How many of you had cannabis before it was legal?
All right.
You know, I actually turned, I became age of majority in Alberta when I turned 18, and then I moved to Ontario before I was 19. So I became illegal again. And then I went to school in the United States where I was illegal a third time for a whole year. So there's a ridiculousness to this. I think you wanted to say a little bit more on the...
It's interesting to look at how youth use changes with legalization. So it's interesting, the Dutch youth use cannabis at about 50% of the American youth, and they've done that for 30 years. It's very low. And now that the states are legalizing cannabis, youth in the states where it's becoming legalized, youth is going down.
Yeah?
Something just came to mind I've never thought of before, but how old are young teens when they start babysitting? I think you can start babysitting when you're about 12, 13, 14. Yeah. And, you know, you're responsible for another living being who's often a baby or a child. So is the concern about kids and cannabis or young people, I mean, that bothers me too. What's a young person? What's a teen? What's a kid? You know, if 19-year-olds are kids, then, you know, we're twisting up our language here. But if a young person is responsible enough to be home alone or to babysit or to have a newspaper route of their own, are they then responsible enough to decide whether or how to use cannabis? And I haven't thought about that before, but I was 12 years old when I was taking care of somebody's kid, and I guess I was responsible enough at that time. So I don't even know. This is just amusing that came to mind. So. Yeah.
I have one quick thought about age limits is that they don't need to be the same for all cannabis products, right? A cream or a salve should be available to anybody. CBD products that don't get you high, there should be no age limits for that at all. Yeah. And, you know, and maybe even... And on the other hand, maybe like a super concentrated psychedelic dose of cannabis should be a higher age limit than being able to smoke a joint or something, something that can really, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing graduated things like that with a lot of stuff. It's the dosage and the potency that affects it more than the substance itself. So a lot of cannabis stuff, I think, should have no age limits at all.
Absolutely. And so, Mark, you just had a question. What exactly was your thought around that? Because it does tie into age limits, absolutely. But
one of the issues is that's being floated by the federal government is should cannabis be available in liquor stores? And the public health analysis of that is actually quite straightforward, is that yes, if it replaces alcohol, because alcohol is more harmful both individually and from a community and family point of view, and no, if it increases the use of alcohol. And we actually don't know yet. There is some evidence coming out of the initial legalization experiences in the States saying that alcohol use goes down, which is actually a good thing when cannabis becomes legalized. But if we want to find out in Canada, what we do is we take four stores in two different provinces, two are urban, two rural, that have established track records in terms of the sale of alcohol, and then we sell cannabis in them, and then we see, does alcohol use go down with that experiment? And if it does, then yes, we should sell it in liquor stores, including the dispensaries. And if alcohol use goes up, we shouldn't sell it in liquor stores. And if it stays the same, then it's a political choice.
Also, if it causes people to combine them together more, that would also be a factor, right?
Absolutely.
Because even if they're not drinking, you know, if they're mixing them together more often, I'd say that's also probably a negative.
And Denmark is specifically using cannabis in programs to get people off of alcohol. So yeah, there's that issue as well. And I know people that have just done that naturally. They just stop drinking alcohol when they start smoking.
And so do you think that might be why the liquor control boards want to sell marijuana? Because they're thinking, well, first of all, some people might choose pot over booze, but maybe it's also a way to sell more booze. I don't know. We don't know how it would happen. But if they're bringing people in to buy weed, and clearly with the supply and demand being demonstrated by dispensaries, a lot of people demand access. Well, and so if they go to a booze store to get their weed, maybe they'll be tempted by that picture of Captain Rum or whoever he is, you know?
They'll be selling infused alcohol pretty quick, right? You'll have infused alcohol with cannabis together combined into one thing, which
could cause problems
too.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're just still experimenting or still getting used to either one of the two substances, right? Did you have a question?
Noctis, if I can write out.
Green fairy?
No.
One of the older Central American civilizations is known as the Toltecs, and there's at least one tribe that continues with the old ways. Once a year, the elders, they climb up their holy mountain, and they take heavy doses of peyote, and they base their plans for the coming year on the insights they received from those experiences. However, they throughout the entire year, they take light doses, and they also give light doses to their children on a regular basis throughout the year. And this is a really good example of how cultural prejudices about drug use can be based much more, or I should say attitude towards drug use can be have far more to do with cultural prejudices rather than the actual effects of the drug.
Absolutely. Ayahuasca traditions also involve infants, actually prenatal infants, children, and at all ages. All ages, people are involved with ayahuasca ceremonies.
You know, the problem is in my mind, has never really been with use. It's the same thing that Kirk was kind of mentioning earlier. It's why we need regulations. It's got nothing to do with the plant. It's once you allow somebody to make money off of it, it's people that are the problem. It's not the plant. And it's the same thing with drugs. What we find, if there's people that have certain attitudes toward drugs, certain cultures that don't have the same problems that other ones do. So trying to find that merge and that meld is really the tricky part.